everybody. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Programs podcast. Along with interviewing our therapists, we're also going to be interviewing important people that serve in various roles that you might not have some familiarity with. And so today we're going to talk to our field director from our Cascades program. So I have joining me here today, Lindsay Boss. And Lindsay has served in many roles. And right now she's serving as the role of our field director in our Cascades location. So welcome, Lindsay.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to start off with background. Like, tell us a little bit about what brought you to this field. I think for people that don't know about wilderness therapy, it's a strange idea, strange profession. Don't know where people might come from or what brings brings them to this field. So tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to Evoke.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I grew up in Colorado and moved to Oregon to go to school, and I was going to be a journalist. That was the goal, the plan. I spent more hours in college working for a newspaper and working for magazines than I did anything else. And at some point in getting my psychology degree, I also started working at the Department of Human Services as an intern and working in Child Protective Services and permanency work. So I was working a lot with kids in the system in Portland and kind of fell head over heels for it. Simultaneously took a semester to go to Ecuador and do some school work there. And at some point, one of my friends on the trip, her partner came to visit, and he had been working for Second Nature for years, and we became fast friends. And he had said, "Hey, you gotta apply. You gotta look into wilderness therapy." So I came back to Portland. I kept working in Child Protective Services, and I applied for the job. And within 8 months of graduating college, I was a field instructor in Bend and continued to commute from Portland to Bend for a while and moved to Bend later on and haven't left. This will be my 7th year with Evoke Cascades, continuing to learn and grow in this field. So
it's interesting, Lindsay, because I think one of the things, of course, I've noticed, you've noticed, I'm sure, is the kind of eclectic background that people come from. Like, people come from all various sources, and oftentimes it's word of mouth where they hear about wilderness therapy. I know you served as a recruiter at some point for Second Nature and then eventually Evoke, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I was a recruiter until about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? I didn't know it was that recent. Tell us a little bit about your various roles. I know you've worked as a field staff. You mentioned that. Tell us about the various roles you've had and kind of the perspective that gives you. Because I don't think there are a lot of people at Evoke that have served in the amount of roles that you've served in on our staff.
Yeah, so I started as a field instructor and did that for almost 2 years. I was a senior when I left, finishing up my project for level 4. And then I moved into the role of just office assistant and getting to see, you know, a whole other side. So you go from, you know, 8 days on, 6 days off in the wilderness doing that work to the day-to-day, how are we getting things in and out to the field? How are we communicating with families? How are we communicating with the rest of the departments? You know, going from doing foot checks daily to email checks daily is a transition, right, for sure. And then from there became the parent coordinator. So then was way more involved with the clinical team and the families and just the process that they go through. So doing a lot with the parent portal, listening to webinars and assigning those and talking to parents about those, talking to parents on a daily basis, managing communication between them and the therapist, and having a really more in-depth understanding of the clinical relationship to families and being a part of that. And then transitioning into assistant field director and kind of compounding since that. I've been in the field department for 3 years now, I think, maybe longer. Right. And so, yeah, learning about staff recruiting, staff training, staff retention. I also took on some nutritional responsibilities after getting my nutritional therapy practitioner's license. And now I'm the field director. The field and operations director, actually. So also managing things like the vehicles and transporters. I needed to tighten a bolt a couple days ago on something. So a wide breadth of responsibilities over the last 6.5 years. And I've definitely seen every aspect of it and continue to be just amazed at how many people it takes to make this work and how well we all work together. From the parents and the other family members that are present to the clinicians to, you know, your part in it and everybody that does the parent workshops, and then the whole army that goes into getting our clients in and out of the field and the food and the water and the families when they visit and other visitors when they visit, the medical team that manages everything from a hangnail to athlete's foot. And then of course what my department does and just the staff and everything that goes into that. It's a very intricate system that requires a lot of communication and a lot of diligence by a lot of people. And that continues to amaze me daily.
So you mentioned, when you were describing that, you mentioned some interest in nutrition. And I know you've brought to us that passion and that idea about looking at the effect of nutrition on our clients and even doing some research about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that passion that you have and that unique perspective that you have?
Yeah. So it started when I was in the field, and something that field instructors and the clients can tell you and the families that are reading letters is that food is a big part of being out there. It is one of the things that the clients spend a lot of time doing, eating. It's one of the things that preoccupies a lot of time and energy, and watching that, it was interesting to me to see not only how important different food items were to clients, whether it was the cheese or the pretzels in their gorp or, you know, fill in the blank, but also how it corresponded with their moods. You know, the day that clients didn't eat breakfast were also the days that they were more lethargic or more angry. The days that they ate a bunch of their gorp at 8 p.m. was the day that they had trouble sleeping. And starting to see the correlation between their emotional investment in the food and also the reaction that their emotions and their bodies were having to food. So when I was actually out of the field and started taking my courses through NTA Nutritional Therapy Association, of course, I got to dive a little bit more into that. And something that was brought to my attention was the concept of diet and autism, and a little bit more of the neurobiology behind the nutrients we consume and how it helps the brain compose itself and how that is also a contributing factor for something like autism, and specifically looking at how carbs and other processed sugars contribute to higher rates of hyperactivity, poorer reabsorption of other nutrients and whatnot, and that often high sugar diets or high carb diets mean less fats, and high fat diets are preferred for any child, but especially children on the spectrum or who struggle with ADHD because of the necessary myelination of parts of the brain. And so children and adults that struggle with ADHD and autism have less myelination in their brains and therefore have trouble with their neuroreceptors. And so all of this information coming into me and learning about this during my NTA program was just kind of mind-blowing. I was like, oh, this explains so much of what's going on in the field and what's going on for these families. And so I'm working on the process of figuring out how to incorporate those diets with our clients in the field to have a little bit more control for them over how they feel in control of their diet and the nutrients that they're consuming, and bringing that correlation and awareness to them, not only for their time in the field, but for when they leave as well, so that they can perpetuate feeling good.
I love it. I love how various passions and backgrounds with a lot of our staff over the years have contributed to the evolution of the field. And I love that you bring that to us. I know a good part of you do a lot of things, but a good part of your day is spent training, supervising our staff, the field staff, the on the ground people doing the work. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about what, I mean, for people, you and I know it because we live it, but for those who don't know what wilderness therapy is and what wilderness field staff do, can you tell us a little bit about that training, what it looks like, what staff have to learn and become skilled in to be able to do this job effectively, and your role in that.
Totally. So on the first day of a staff orientation, which is where we bring in our prospective staff and get ready to send them out for 8 days to learn about the job, I explain Evoke like a human body, and I explain the field staff being like the circulatory system. It's the heart, It's the beat, it's what brings information from one system to another system and keeps the body running. And that's 100% how I feel about it. It is the heart of what we do. So the first step that field staff go through is that orientation, and it's an 8-day period where they are out in the field with 1 to 2 of our more seniored instructors learning about the job. They're learning about the weird words we use, like zippy means ziplock and wig means sleeping bag. And they learn about the therapeutic processes. They learn how to bust a fire. They learn how to set up shelters. They learn about the daily routine. They meet a group. They practice scenarios, and they start getting comfortable with the concept of regular vulnerability in the feedback process. From there, they do a 3-week internship period where they are, again, going in for 8-day shifts, but this time with other staff members and having the opportunity to practice all the skills they learned in orientation, witness more of what the field actually looks like, ask more questions, continue to participate in that feedback process and development process. And also get to do that in a safe space where it's not 100% their responsibility yet. So they're being asked to run tasks with having a backup system there, having other staff there to help them navigate through that so that it's safe and therapeutically effective. And then after those 3 internships, they continue on their path of development. Our field staff are required to have an eval done by their peers every single week. And they are required to participate in in-service trainings with the field department and the medical department every week, and the clinical department as well. So they're getting at least 2, if not 3 hours of training every week at base before they go to the field. And then Will and myself also, Will is the assistant field director at the Cascades branch. Him and I go out once to twice a week to be with the field staff and work with them alongside them. Watching what they're doing, talking about what they're doing, coaching what we can out there as well to participate in that feedback process and development. And Will and I are remarkably close to our field staff. We know every single one. We know where they went on their off shift. We know what they're passionate about. We know what skills they love, and we know what skills they struggle with. And we are their cheerleaders and their pains in the neck when we are pushing them to enter that discomfort zone and become more comfortable with things, whether that looks like busting a fire when they're really good at holding boundaries and getting vulnerable with clients and holding a safe space, or vice versa. Because there is a spectrum of staff that have a spectrum of skills that are all valuable to the field, and we want every single staff to be working on every single part of that spectrum at all times. So it's a really involved process that requires the field department itself to role model a lot of what those skills look like and how important they are, and also continue to have those hard conversations and hold pretty firm boundaries with our staff about what we expect and what our clients deserve out there.
You know, listening to you, Lindsay, obviously I'm aware of what we do and who we are, but listening to you in your various roles, I just don't think people understand the complexity of the systems, like you said, of the numbers of people in the background that are required to run a program like this, and also just the complexity of the training, from physical safety to emotional safety to logistics. Your role, I think, offers that perspective that very few have, especially because you've been in more than one role. You mentioned knowing your staff and your passions. I'm just a little bit curious about your passions, maybe What do you like to do for fun when you're not at work, when you're not at Evoke? And don't tell us that you're there all the time, because there's something pretty close to the truth in that. But what are you passionate about outside of work?
That is a great question. I do spend a lot of time thinking about work because I am passionate about it. And I have a dog who is one of my best friends, and we do a lot of adventures together. I also in the last year, become a national ski patroller. And so I spend several weekends a month volunteering at the ski area nearby Mount Bachelor, which is an awesome way to continue to be outside and hone in on my medical skills and crisis management and all that other stuff. So it's a good way for me to practice things that I can utilize at work, but in a different setting, and with a different population, which I really appreciate. Also been really big into travel and other ways of just expanding my mind. It's been a process in the last couple of years to heal from some knee surgeries, and I've finally gotten back into trying to raft and trying to mountain bike and trying to do all the things that Bend, Oregon is so great at providing for us. And I'm fortunate to have a really great community of former field staff that were field staff with me and other friends and a fantastic partner that allow me to explore Bend in ways that are not at work and don't resemble work, so that I can continue to appreciate the outdoors for me and my mental health and my self-care, and continue to expand on the different aspects of myself that have allowed me to get to this point and be passionate about the work that we do.
I have a question about what working at Evoke has taught you. And I'll further that question by saying, whether it be from the staff that you work with, the roles that you worked in, the students, the families, maybe the psychological curriculum, what are the lessons? Because I know that staff tell me all the time that this job, this experience teaches them as much as they're able to teach. You know, it offers them as much as, or maybe even more than it offers the students. So what are the big takeaway lessons for you from any of the perspective and any of the perspectives that you've had working at Evoke? What are the biggest takeaways for you, the lessons for life?
That's a really great question, and speaks to a couple pieces of feedback that I've received and that have changed over my time here. Very early on as a field staff, I received feedback that I needed to figure out how to work less hard and balance what I wanted to do with who I wanted to be and how I was showing up at work. And that has been such a beautiful challenge that I have taken on, and learning how to hold my own boundaries, how to say the word no, and how to also rely on a team. I'm a pretty independent human being that doesn't like to ask for help, and this job has forced me to do it more times than I can count, and to trust people and to lean into my vulnerability as a human that can't do everything. And that has been an invaluable lesson. And the second piece of feedback that has always resonated with me and helps to articulate a lot of what I do in the world now is, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but the feedback was something along the lines of, you don't understand how much power you hold when people see your reactions to something you care about. And that was something I don't think anybody had ever said to me, and I don't think I ever believed it. And I've started to believe it more and more in the last 4 years, and have really taken it to heart when I am talking to clients, when I am talking to families, when I am talking to staff, when I'm talking to my superiors, of when somebody really cares about something and everybody else in the room can feel that, you do have a lot of power. And there is, it's necessary to have great intention when you have that passion, and being able to direct that intention appropriately, whether that's at the grocery store and I'm asking for where the milk is, or if I'm talking about a policy change in the program. Learning about intention has been invaluable to how I operate on this planet with other humans. And I cannot name another company or program that I've worked with leading up to Evoke that has asked me to look at that.
One thing that parents or people that don't know wellness therapy underestimate is the impact that staff have on the clients. They associate change with the therapist because that's where their point of contact is, point of you know, where they get the information. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen in your career here, as you've been in the field and as you've supervised staff, about the kind of people and the impact that they have on the young people that they work with?
Yeah. I mean, as I had said earlier, I firmly believe that the field staff are the circulatory system, the heart of what we do. They are out there 365 days a year, They are out there on their birthdays, their anniversaries, their holidays, for the kids and that the clients, the adults, all of them. And the work that they do is so raw and vulnerable because not only are they managing the safety of the clients, but they're doing it in tandem with their own needs in the wilderness and their own emotional experiences. And it's not uncommon for a client to come to a revelation or finally want to share something vulnerable and scary and traumatic. And they share it with this field staff that's sitting with them in the rain, and they're both hungry and they're both tired and they're both wet and they're both present for this story. And the field staff without blinking will take that story into their hands and carry it with them for the rest of the week and cry with them and ask them if they're okay and hold their cold feet to their stomachs to warm them up. And just, it's such a raw and vulnerable experience that I don't think a lot of our clients get to experience. I think a lot of times all of us are trained to take our trauma and take our stories and shove them down and deal with them. And to have the experience as an adolescent of somebody that is a little bit older than you know, not your parent, not your grandparent, but they're an adult, they're living life. They've figured it out to some extent, to sit down with you and to hear why you're scared or angry or sad or powerless, and to take that with you and say, you're right. And to continue showing you care and compassion, even when you've broken a boundary or broken respect for that person, is just, it's indescribable. I don't think I'm giving it the magnitude that it deserves. But our staff are doing work that so many people could use to heal who they are as a child and who they become as an adult. And our staff just do that without blinking, without wavering. And they come back from the field with these stories and these experiences with smiles on their face and love for one another and love for the kids out there, regardless of what happened. And regardless for how many times that they're the brunt of whatever aggression or anger the client might have about this experience they're having. And it's so powerful, I think, as any person to have somebody sit next to you and say, I hear you and I care for you and I'm going to continue to care for you, even if you don't show that same experience to me.
My therapist talks about, as a therapist, being in the mud with your clients and in every way describable. You're describing how they're in it with them, you know, sitting beside them. And I think you speak to it very well. Now I'm going to ask another question, and we can always edit this out if it doesn't go well. But I honestly think back to when you and I first met each other face to face and had our first time. And I think I wasn't so sure of you. We had a rocky start, our first shift, if you will, together. And I think you had the same with me. We've talked it out over the past few years. And so, I'm just curious what your thoughts are about where we were then, where we are now, and kind of how we got there. I have my answer to it, so I'll share that with you, but I wanted to see if you had any thoughts about that on a personal level, how it relates to our professional relationship together.
Totally. And I can think about my professional development at this company through hairstyles. And I know that the first time I met you, I think I had a mohawk. I was an angrier, strong version of a young 20s female that wanted to prove that she could do anything. And you intimidated me because you were the man in charge and you were in the field to do work. As a young person, as a young female with a rebellious side, I think I definitely presented as a, you know, don't F with me, as a client would, as anybody would that is intimidated. And over the years, I've moved into different roles, which means that our relationship has looked different. And we've gotten closer in proximity to each other by way of going through events together, hosting events together, and being able to actually talk. I think initially I was taking directives from you, and over the time we've established a pretty open line of communication and feedback. And I've appreciated that the moments that I have talked to you in the last 4 years and brought you my experience and my thoughts, you've listened earnestly and respected the space that I was asking you to hold for me. and given me difficult feedback as well. And that over my own development, is a sign of respect as a, instead of a sign of challenge or disrespect, as it would have been right at the beginning, where I think, I questioned you and you questioned me. So that's been my experience of our evolution. I don't know if that resonates in any way.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you share it. I think for me, I saw that it wasn't just the mohawk, but it was like your expression. I felt the wall, and you know, it was a little intimidating to me. I probably wouldn't have used that word back then, because that's more vulnerable to admit, but it felt a little bit off-putting, and I could feel that kind of, we were treating each other. I was treating you as other, in a lot of ways. And for me, especially because I knew you were making progress in your evolution as a staff and moving up, you know, having opportunities to be promoted. I talked to my partner, your boss, Rick Heiser, and I said, I'm okay with this. You work with her every day, but I want to give her feedback. And that's what I came to respect about you. Two things is, I gave you tough feedback and you listened and you were open. And then I think the thing that happened is I listened a little bit more. I saw your story. You shared a little bit. You know, when I approached you with openness, which for me might sound strange, but is giving difficult feedback, that takes a certain kind of openness to me. I'm aversive to confrontation, and so it's not my natural instinct. And so when I said it and talked to you and you just talked about your side of things, I just started to hear your story. So in a lot of ways, it's like a lot of my relationships and a lot of my relationships with the clients, like you said, it was just about seeing you after a while. And now I've come to appreciate, respect, be grateful. You know, I'll say to you, Lindsay, that the first thing that I learned when I became a wilderness therapist 23 years ago was how amazing the people that do your job were and are. And I will tell you today, I put you at the top of that category. And my gratitude for you, for what you've brought, and for your willingness to grow and to evolve and to challenge me and to ask difficult questions and to listen to the answers. That's the amazing thing, is you ask difficult questions, but you also listen to the answers. My gratitude for you is immense. I'm grateful for what you do for us and what you do for our clients, and glad to be on the same team.
Let me demystify my eyes for a second. thank you. Yeah, that means a lot. And I echo that my intimidation for you has definitely grown into a profound respect, and I appreciate being on your team as well.
And I like it when you're my webinar moderator. I miss you when you're not. It's fun to have you on there. So
yeah, well, I'll be back soon. My classes are winding down with Ski Patrol. They're about to vote me on, so I won't have to do much more of this probationary stuff.
All right. Well, I look forward to it. Thank you for joining us, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
And thank you, folks, for joining us. And I hope these give you a glimpse, a window into not just the therapist, but the people that I think would be described as behind the scenes that are doing, in many cases, the lion's share of the work. So thanks for joining us on our series, and we look forward to our next episode. Bye-bye.